We have two very long agendas for this morning, and we have a very firm end to the meeting this morning. So I'd like to call the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee to order. We're going to skip over all action items since we do not at the moment have a quorum, and start on information item 4A, which talks about the 08 and 09 revenues and how we are handling those revenues this year and next year, I guess. Who's going to speak?
I'll address that issue. Thank you. Begin on page 24. As the board's aware, the fare increase was implemented January 6 of 2008 to extend over an 18-month period to generate revenues to balance the 09 budget. Projected revenues for the 18 months being $109.3 million, one-third of it being collected in this fiscal year, January through June, and then the remainder to be collected throughout 09, which would mean we anticipate generating $36 million in fiscal 08 that we would carry forward. You see on this page a chart showing by category, be it rail, bus, parking or passenger revenue, how the revenue would be generated. The good news is you'll see in the financials that Mr. Harkin will present at the end of this package for the month of January, albeit not a full month, we generated $5.3 million in additional revenue. And the preliminary numbers for February indicate that we are right on track to generate $6 million, which is the monthly amount that we would need to come up to the $36 million. We've also noticed in the very brief period, January and February, that the percent of Smart Trip use, passengers using the Smart Trip card on the bus, has increased from 22% for the first half of this year. It's up to 26% in the 2 months for the fare increase. And of course, that means there would be no increase to ride the bus if you use the Smart Trip card. The staff recommendation will be that the first $36 million of passenger and parking revenue generated in 08 would move forward to 09, and we're keeping that segregated out of the other accounts in 08, clearly identifying it. And then assuming a year-end balance for 08, which we're on target to have, it would be the staff recommendation that that would go into the operating reserve, which per board policy is up to 1% of the operating budget, or approximately $13 million for FY09.
Is that it?
Yes, sir.
Any questions? I have some, but don't. Okay. First of all, is this $36 million going to be taken only at the end of the year, or are you going to do this month by month?
Month by month, we have a set-aside account, which you'll see the $5.3 million in the financials for this month, for January.
So each month you'll set aside the first dollar of revenues up to whatever the monthly estimate is?
Yes.
Okay, and so by the end of the year you will have accumulated your presumably 36.2?
Based on January and February, yes.
So that means, and are you going to do this by mode so we can see how the different modes are affected?
Yes, we will.
And then next year you will apply this as a credit to revenues?
Yes.
So it will be an extra line item that says this is the revenue that's coming from this reserve that you created?
Correct.
Okay. I understand then how you're doing it. So what that means is, and I just want to make sure we're all in agreement as to what this does, that means if there is a shortfall in revenues including this extra amount, that is, unless you make, say, $6 million more than budgeted, there will be a reduction in revenues in a given month in 08. So if we were supposed to make $100 million in passenger revenues, and instead of making 106, we made 105, $6 million will go to 09, but it will be under budget by a million in 08 for that month. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So all shortfalls will occur against 08.
All short. Yes.
Okay.
Is that a way of saying that the additional revenue from the fare increase is being counted for '09, irrespective of what happens in '08?
That's what I think I'm hearing. Is that right?
Yes.
Not all of it, but two-thirds of it.
No, no, in '08, all of it is being...
Two-thirds is being collected in '09, all of it is being attributed to '09 regardless of being collected.
That's, yes, the first dollar in goes to '09.
Which is consistent, I believe, with what was said when we approved the fare increase.
Yes.
It's an important point, but I do think that that is actually what we said we wanted done.
So any shortfall becomes an '08 shortfall. If at the end of the fiscal year, we have extra revenues, which right now it looks like we're going to have, but who knows what's going to happen between now and then, but if we have extra revenues and we have cost savings, those will go, according to board policy, first into the operating reserve.
Yes, that would be our recommendation, and you're right. Right now, revenues are virtually right on the budget, although there are some variances by mode, and the expenditures are under budget by $6 million.
Okay,
so what surplus we have today is primarily in expenditures being less than budget.
And once we get above the 1% of the annual budget that goes to the reserve, the remainder would be an audit adjustment and would revert to the jurisdictions?
Subject to board approval, yes.
Actually, I don't think board has to approve that. They have to prove it if it isn't that.
Okay.
Okay? So that's what we're saying we're going to do right now. And we'll be able to see this on a month-by-month basis so we know what's going on, both in the reserve and what's going on in the other revenues.
Exactly right. And the important thing, I believe, is that we track it by mode. So before the board approves the '09 budget, for example, if bus revenue continues to be below budget as it is today, we may wish to make an adjustment in the base in '09.
I guess I have a question either for council or for the chair of the board, and that is, is this something that staff can just go ahead and do, or do we actually have to approve this?
For them to do
this method of allocating revenue, because they are allocating revenue into the next year. Now, when we approved the fare increase,
I think that's what we approved.
That was certainly what we were saying we wanted to do.
Well, my understanding of what we approved.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
Legal question.
Are we okay not taking an action?
That is what the board approved.
Okay. This is just a definition of what the additional is, how it works. Okay, that's fine.
Good question.
Yes.
The 36.2 that we see here, that's the projection now based on January and February. Did I hear you say that?
Yes.
And what was it that we had budgeted?
36.2.
Okay, so what you're saying is based on the first 2 months, you're not changing your forecast of what you're going to get.
Exactly.
Actually, what I think this 36.2 is, it's the 109 that they said they had budgeted, divided two-thirds, one-third, regardless of what happened in January and February.
And that's true, but January and February support that
they support that happening.
Yes.
At this point, there's no variation based on the first 2 months between what you're experiencing and what you were forecasting.
That's what we think over the six-month period. As I mentioned, January, because we implemented almost a week into the month, we lost a week, if you will, so we generated 5.3. But February appears to be slightly above the $6 million average. So hopefully by the end of this fiscal year, we're at $36 million.
By definition, you'll be at $36 million, whether you like it or not.
Right, right.
Okay. All right, any other questions on this item? Let's move on to the next item, which is the...
Mr. Chairman?
Oh, I'm sorry.
There now being a quorum present. I move approval of the minutes of the January 10th and February 14th meeting. That's in order.
That is in order. I think I have some changes.
Okay, so I'll make my motion.
No, I don't. No, I don't. Sorry. It was in the other committee.
Seconded.
And okay, so it's been moved by Mr. Zimmerman and
seconded
by Ms. Hewlett. Without objection, the minutes are approved. Also, the agenda is approved without objection. And let's go back to action item 3A. Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman, for noting that we have a quorum. Ms. Liu?
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The action item before the committee today is a request to award a contract for external audit services. I am here today to request the committee consider Clifton Gunderson LLP, the technically qualified and best value external auditor identified by the IG, and recommend appropriate action by the Board of Directors. This contract will provide external audit services and management-type audit services for a base period of 3 years with a provision for 2 one-year options. The process that our office undertook to identify and select the technically qualified and best value proposer is outlined on page 11. This process includes soliciting major accounting firms, of which we solicited six, establish an evaluation support team, use a best value procurement approach, third oral presentation from the selected proposer. We identified and selected technically qualified and best value proposer. We then discussed the selection with the Subcommittee on Audits and Investigation on March the 6th. If the committee approves the awarding of this contract to Clifton Gunderson, the funding impact is noted on page 12. As you will see on the third item, this action, that contract will total for the five-year period a little over $1.2 million. Because we are changing auditors this year, it's very important that we start early. We like for the auditor to start in the month of May. This will require $33,750 so they could cover the month of May and the month of June for fiscal year 2008. And we request that that money be from the general manager's budget. Needless to say, the work performed under this contract beyond June the 30th of this year will be subject to the board approval of the FY 2009 and subsequent budgets. Therefore, we are recommending that the board committee technically consider Clifton Gunderson, technically qualified and best value external auditor identified by the Inspector General, and recommend appropriate action to the full board. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee forward the request, the recommendation approved to the board.
Is there a second?
Second.
It was moved by Mr. Zimmerman, seconded by Ms. Hewlett. Just one other question, just to make sure. I just heard you say that the 08 amount was coming out of the general manager's budget. Is that where it's budgeted to come from?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So it's been moved and seconded. All in favor of this action?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have another action item. That's the wireless network neutral host request for proposals update. I guess it's more than an update because you want us to act on this.
I just wanted to approve.
Good morning. Today I am seeking preliminary approval to solicit proposals to design, build, and operate a comprehensive wireless network to provide riders, Metro Police, and rail operations personnel with cell phone and broadband services in all 47 underground stations and in 50 miles of our tunnel. This wireless network will support a variety of wireless services, which you see before you, both customer, rider, and operational services. The three most important points that I am making today are, first, that once this comprehensive wireless network is in place, any cell phone can be used by any rider or any operational personnel in any geography of Metro, either above ground or below ground in our tunnels. Secondly, that this proposal asks for one comprehensive wireless service rather than in one comprehensive wireless network rather than the variety of vertical wireless networks that we have today, and third, that this comprehensive network will bring us all of the wireless services which our riders and operators need today, and all of those that we foresee in the future. In terms of cost and time, this proposal requests license to finance, build, and operate the comprehensive wireless system at no cost to Metro. The partnership which we are requesting bears the build and operational cost. The partner initially owns the system. The financial officer's offers must include a minimum annual guarantee that includes escalators, and no zero compensation offers will be considered by us. The annual revenue estimates to Metro are between $200,000 and $2 million a year. Our licensee partner will charge other wireless providers, providers like T-Mobile, like AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, a fee for using the system that is built, and then Metro will charge our licensee partner user fees. The service is to all underground stations and tunnels, all 47 of those. In terms of other transportation authorities, it is New York, ourselves, and Boston, who are all in exactly this phase of building a neutral host. That is the RFP or the planning cycle of building a neutral host, and those three of the top five authorities in the transportation authorities in the U.S. are the ones who are building neutral host facilities, and only one other transportation authority, Chicago, is providing both above ground and below ground wireless services. Chicago does that, but it does it now with only one cellular provider. We will do it with all cellular providers. Time frame, our implementation time frame is between 18 and 48 months from the time we go to contract, which we expect to do in the fall, and we will implement the most active stations first. So our recommended board action today is that we are asking for approval to release the RFP to build this for a licensee to finance, design, and build this comprehensive network, and we will return for contract approval in the fall.
Thank you, Ms. Peck. Let me ask two questions and then see if anybody else has questions. When you say public safety radio, does that mean police and fire?
Yes.
So it's going to be the network on which those communications will occur, and that's similar to what we have now?
Yes, it will be on the network of the next generation of police network. It will carry the next generation of police.
And when we say that other carriers will also be able to use this network in addition to the one that has put it in, are there any provisions that assure that the prices that are charged those other networks are reasonable?
Whomever the licensee is going to take a very substantial cost to put this network in. That licensee must recover their costs, and free market allows that licensee to charge free market costs, but if the prices he charges are not competitive, he's not going to attract customers to his network.
So the answer is no. We're not constraining it, and there's
and
nothing
we
else
are not
other
constraining
than the free market
it at all. That's correct.
So
exactly
it would be
correct.
Possible for somebody to charge enough that they could scare away everybody else and have a monopoly.
They would then have they would then suffer the entire cost of building that network, and we see no appetite for any provider to want to do that.
Okay. So what we're saying is, we believe that the free market and the costs of this will be sufficient to prevent that scenario
yes.
from occurring.
Yes.
But we have no provision to prevent it should it not occur.
That's correct.
Okay. Other questions? Mr. Zimmerman.
Sorry. Just a couple of quick questions.
Mr. Mick.
The proposal talks about underground only, and you mentioned that Chicago was the only other property doing above ground. Tell me a little bit about the difference between the underground provision of this information and then above ground.
In terms of cellular services, our riders today, regardless of the cellular service that they have that cellular service, because each of the individual cellular providers has their own network providing that service above ground. Below ground, we are doing a very efficient initiative in requiring that all of the services provided below ground are provided from one single comprehensive integrated host, which is called a neutral host because it is neutral to any of the frequencies that the cellular providers use and accommodates all of those frequencies from one set of equipments. That's important to us because track access is so limited for us that when we go down and build, and we're going to build 50 miles of cable in this system, we've got to get down there once, we've got to build once, and we've got to accommodate all of the underground providers through a single set of equipments, which this neutral host does.
Mr. Zimmerman.
How and when will this be evaluated? Let me put it a little differently. How and when will we know if this was successful?
We will know very early on because within the first 18 months, we will implement that with the very first implementation, we will in effect know that the whole system works, because since it is a comprehensive system, when we install at the first station and at the frequencies of the first providers, we will know that that will work for those frequencies at all of the stations. As we install additional frequencies, we will know at the first installation at that frequency cycle that it works for that frequency. But on the very first installation, we will know, because it is a comprehensive central hubbed system, we will know that the system itself works.
Chairman, I would, assuming this is going forward, I would like to see criteria established at the outset that would essentially define what success or failure would be for this, and the points at which we would make that check, so that you wouldn't say this was a good choice if, or this was a failure if, and at various points, whether it's 12 months, 18 months, 36 months, whatever point it is, that we would have a report back to us evaluating on the basis of the criteria established at the outset. I think this is a particularly important area to do that kind of thing, because it's an area in which it is hard for us otherwise to know. I think in my experience, IT is an area in which most people who are working with it, whether it's people in the organization, most staff people, and certainly board members of the public, have very little feedback, very little way to know. You only know when something completely breaks down that there's something going wrong. But you don't really have a good sense the way we do when, lots of us know if buses aren't running on time or trains aren't running on time, doors malfunction, there's, several hundred thousand people who know it. But with this kind of thing, it's such a black box, frankly. We don't know what goes on inside. I think we need to have some way of evaluating and understand what it means that what is a very large expenditure, we're saying this is a good thing to do and here's why, and afterwards or during be able to say, it was the right thing to do and this is why, or maybe not, maybe we need to rethink what we're doing. And if we don't establish that at the outset, I think what happens is we're in the situation that we're in right now, which is whoever the latest IT person is that we've hired has come in with a way to solve our problems, and we just give them money, the problems will all be solved. But we never really know what we've done, or whether it's really the right thing or not. So I would like, at this point, before this thing completely launches, that we've said, here's what we mean this is going to do in terms that can be evaluated objectively, even if it's by somebody else who has to look at it afterwards, who has some expertise, who want to say, you know, yes, these things were accomplished, these things weren't accomplished, overall, here's, you know, here's how you did. So we'll have a little better way of evaluating this particular
exercise. Mr. Zimmerman, is there a subtext to your comment, and that would be that if they fail to meet those criteria, the project stops or has got to be adjusted in order to get there?
Some kind of correction is made, you know, before you go so far down it that you're just carrying out a program because the board approved it at some point and doesn't even know.
But you don't want them just to come back and tell us, well, no, it's not doing it, but they're going ahead anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Ms. Hutchins.
I just wanted to tag on to that because I have a different approach to looking at this, and that is, and I go back to your very first slide. Your very first slide talked about what the outcomes and what we were trying to accomplish here. And I would not like to see it later. I want to see that criteria now then, if that's what you want to use as a measurement. That is, I think we need to know before too much of the investment has started the criteria for evaluating.
Well, that is what I'd like the criteria established beforehand.
Okay, that's
so that
well,
as we go along, we'll know what we're going to
okay, because I okay.
That was my intention. Thank you.
But you're not asking for board approval of the criteria, are you?
I was chaired by Mike. My assumption is that we would add this criteria and you would approve it at the board meeting.
Okay, so. So it would be part of the action in the full board.
Yes.
Would be the criteria.
Yes.
Is that satisfactory? And also the implication here that Mr. Zimmerman had that if people do not meet the criteria, the project stops, or they have to adjust and they cannot continue until they do meet the criteria. Is that acceptable?
Okay. Another follow-up question, the implementation timeline, 18 to 48 months, and I really have a question more about the rest of the system maintenance work. I mean, to be able to go in and lay this conduit, there's obviously constraints, and with our longer running operational hours, that window is much smaller than it's ever been. How do we possibly do this along with the other necessary track maintenance work?
The reason, in fact, that it is taking a full 4 years to complete this activity is exactly that, Mr. Monme, is that we are very focused on the most efficient use of access to our tracks in the slender off-revenue hours that we have. And as I say, to doing it one time, not multiple times, and doing it comprehensively. And we've done those calculations as to what track access rates will be available over and above our normal preventive maintenance requirements, and those stand first to make sure that our current system is reliable. And when you calculate them in this build, that is precisely what is leading. It is not the work itself that is so complex. It is the track access rights that leads to that time implementation.
Okay. That's just my sense that it'd be the position of this board that that's the, you know, our core business is transit
yes,
service.
Absolutely.
And that's what should come first. And
absolutely.
We don't want to push that out of the way to do something, which is a very good thing to pursue, but not our
absolutely.
Our core business.
Thank you, Mr. Monroe. I think that's a very important point. Ms. Peck, as much as I appreciate your very great trust in the free market, one of the things we've discovered over the years in this country is sometimes the free market does things that are not necessarily what we expect it to do. And one of the major objectives here is that the label you have at the top, the one that says neutral host, which does imply that other people do get access, not just whoever wins this. I'm not sure that we can come up with good criteria that would force somebody to come up with prices that would be reasonable, because as you say, there are an awful lot of factors that would have to be considered. However, we could ask them to propose to us the basis upon which they would charge other providers. And if there's no objection from other committee members, I'd like to ask that that be part of the RFP and that that be reported to the board also, obviously not when we approve now, but when we're ready to make the selection. along with an assessment as to whether that is a reasonable basis and is an enforceable basis for making sure that we do in fact get broader access and that we do not end up inadvertently with a monopoly. Is that all right?
Yes, absolutely.
With those changes, are we ready to act? May I have a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that was, again, unanimous. And it was Ms. Hewlett that moved, and Ms. Hutchins that seconded. We're doing this for the record to make absolutely certain we always know who did which. Which completes our action items. We've already done information item A. May we move to information item B? And Mr. Woodruff, are you doing that?
Yes, sir. The information item B is reviewing the revenues as they are in the 09 budget that was presented to the board in January. And the next item, agenda item, will review those expenditures. And I would point out that when we built the 09 budget, it was roughly 6 months ago. We had little experience in the 08 budget. So what we're going to go over is certainly subject to update as we see trends and expenditure patterns, and we're in the process of doing the updates as we speak. You see that we have projected total revenue of $789 million, the majority of which comes from the passenger fares. The non-passenger revenue made up of advertising of $39 million, parking $51 million, fiber optics and rent.
Mr. Woodruff, may I stop you right there?
Yes.
Does the passenger fare revenue include the amount that comes from the reserve?
No.
No. So is that above the 789?
It will be.
So the 789 plus an additional 36 million.
Correct.
Correct.
So the total budget will be a larger number than this number.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. That carry forward.
And when we do the budget, can we show it that way so we know what the grand total is?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Do you have a question?
I think we'll hear it. I, one point. I'll wait and hear it.
Okay. All right.
We'll go back one slide,
Mr. Zimmerman.
Just to make a point here, $134 million is all non-passenger revenue.
Yes.
That's our advertising contract. That's fiber optic stuff. But it also says parking.
Yes.
So that's what people pay to park with.
Correct.
So it's not really non-passenger, but it's not fair.
That's a better way to
That's
how
a
much
better category.
Of that $134 million is parking?
Parking is $51 million.
Ooh, okay. So that's significant. So if we move that over, so we'd be over $700 million for passenger revenues more broadly.
Yes, sir.
And down under $100 million, around $80 million. And is everything left there really clearly none? It says rent. That means somebody's paying us rent.
Somebody's paying us rent. And you get into advertising is $39 million. Fiber optics are $10 million. So when you get to the rent category, it becomes quite small.
I just want to make the point because a lot of times, you know, we obviously make sense to make revenue any way we happen to be able to. And we get money from people who want to pay to run fiber optic cables and tunnels we have. And if we can do some advertising, that's great. If we can get some creative ways to get more, that's great. But people out there often think that there's this huge source of untapped revenue. And what isn't often appreciated is how small it really is relative to everything else. I mean, passenger fare, I mean, look at all this stuff. This is the non-subsidy revenue, basically, right?
Yes.
And, you know, so it's really only about half or close to half of what we're doing to cover our budget. And advertising is, 5% of that? I'm trying to do that in my head.
A little less.
Something a little less than 5%. And all the non-passenger revenue itself. I mean, and that was with an advertising contract that everyone has always told me we got really lucky on because we had it bid when it was good for us. And it hasn't turned out so good for the advertisers. So we did really well. And it's a really small amount of $1 billion to $1.5 billion budget. And, you know, that's just important to keep in mind. Again, we should do what we can to get such revenues, but there's no magic there. There's no, you know, silver bullet to the budget. That if you just advertise more, we're going to, you know, pay for everything. And I think the relative magnitude of that needs to be borne in mind.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions at this point? Please continue.
Thank you. On the next slide, you see the passenger fares at 655. To Mr. Zimmerman's point, the subsidy for 09 is projected at 535 million. We've assumed a 2% increase in ridership for the rail. Each 1% generates approximately $5 million in revenue, additional revenue. And we've projected a 1% ridership increase in bus, which generates approximately $1 million. The next several charts I'll go through rather quickly, but 10-year trends, and you see ridership on the rail, revenue, and average fares increasing. And if you look in the years of the fare increases, I'm looking at the average fare chart. We had increases in 04 and 05, clearly reflected in the chart, and then, of course, in 09, a fare increase, bringing our average fare to approximately $2.27 on the rail.
Quick question. Your 08 does not include the fare increase we just made. It's probably historical for the first half of this year.
That's correct.
Okay. Otherwise, the jump wouldn't be quite that big.
Right. Yes, you're exactly right. On the Metro bus, I would point out that in 04, we installed new fare boxes. So the data prior to 04, I think, is not as accurate as it might be. That's why some of these trends look a little unusual in the ridership, for example. So I would suggest we focus on 04 forward. And again, very similar, you see growth trends in the revenue and in the average fare categories. On the access, similar trends. What I found interesting was on the average fare, you see from 06 forward, you see variance in the average fare. And there are two variables: that if an attendant rides with the passenger, they do not pay the fare. So if you have more attendants, then the average fare would be a smaller number. And also, beginning in 06, we offered a trip voucher. If we, as the provider, were late, there could be a free trip voucher. That also could impact the average fare. So that's why you see some variance in the average fares in 07, 08, and 09. And, of course, we did not have a fare increase for the Metro access when we did the recent fares. The important point, again, is that we will update all these revenues. We'll come back to the committee in April with potential revisions. Any questions, Mr. Chairman, or should I proceed?
Any other questions? No? Okay. Yeah, please proceed. As we're going through this, I just want to make an observation, and it's really for probably many of the people who are listening, and that is part of the job of the board here is to explore and question some of the numbers that are being presented to us as the proposal for the 09 budget. The fact that we ask questions about it does not imply that we don't trust the staff or we don't believe they're doing a good job, but part of our job is to make sure that as we get through this process, we understand why we have to spend what we have to spend, and if we find some places where maybe we don't have to spend as much or the revenue estimate could be made differently. And as you know, when we did the fare increase, I had some questions about whether the revenue estimate could be made differently. Those are the legitimate things for this committee to be doing at this point. So when we're asking questions, it's not an implication that there's something wrong. It's for us to understand better.
Okay. Moving to the expenditure side of the 09 budget, a trend line of our expenditures. We've discussed we have a $1.3 billion operating proposed budget. You see on the right hand of the chart that indicates a 15% increase from 08 to 09. However, you see at the very top of the 08 budget, there's the expenditure credit, if you will, of $44 million, which is a one-time item. if you neutralize that, the increase would be approximately 11%. The details of the increase at a high level are $84 million, or 7%, is due to such things as increases in energy, health claims, worker comp claims. The one-time only savings that I just mentioned, the $40 million for the litigation judgment that we used to balance the 08 budget. We also have a $4 million health insurance rebate. It's $31 million in this budget for proposed service improvements. Bus service, which is to be determined, we do not have specific routes. $14 million for the operation of additional rail cars, the 6,000 series. Also, full funding for increases that were partial year in 08. Metro Access, $4 million, that's for additional ridership. We have deadheading costs for southeastern West Ox. We also have $5 million for reimbursable routes, and as you can see, two of those are subsidy neutral. Program initiatives, we have $5 million for GASB 45, and that will be subject of a future presentation to the committee, but very quickly, that is a requirement that either we fund health insurance for retirees or show it on the balance sheet of the Metro Authority books. I believe all the contributing jurisdictions have chosen to fund it in the research that we did, but we will come back to the board. That's clearly a policy decision that the board needs to make.
Since you brought that up, let me comment briefly. And I have to disclose in this process that I have a conflict of interest. GASB 45 requires that the health insurance for retirees be paid or be showed on the books,
accounted for
one way or another. And as a retiree of this organization, it is in my interest for us to put it out there somehow, and I'd love to have us funded. So I have a bias. On the other hand, as a member of the board of this organization, the very serious question that I ask is, the main rationale, and this is something we have to explore between now and when we approve the budget, and your presentation later will be an important one relative to that. The main rationale for doing this is to assure that when you issue bonds, that liability is accounted for, and you are appropriately funding it. So it's extremely important for local jurisdictions, who almost all have AAA ratings, to assure the people who are potentially going to buy the bonds and the bond rating agencies that this is in fact funded. We don't issue bonds on the same basis. We issue bonds basically on the essentiality of service and to some degree on the perception that the local jurisdictions will in fact pay our debts. And so it's not clear to me that knowing what local jurisdictions do, or in many cases even what other transit agencies do, is a clear indication as to what we ought to do. But I think it's something that we need to seriously consider and figure out, is this an area where in fact we do need to put the money there? And is the fact that the accounting standard changed, the fact that occurred, a sufficient basis for us to spend in this case, $5 million additional in this budget.
Right, and
I think that's a very serious question, and I raise it even though it's counter to my own best interests.
We'll put all these numbers in perspective. There's another consideration I believe the board will want to look at, and that is if we set up a fund, it's very similar to a trust fund for retirement payments. So you set up a fund, you invest the money, you have return on investment. So you'll see when we make this detailed presentation that over the long run, many, many years, 20 years, that it would be to the authority's advantage to set aside the money and actually fund it. But it's a policy decision of how you want to do it. The analogy would be if we had not set up trust funds, we would have huge payments to retirees for their retirement benefits. So that's a consideration I think the board's going to want to look at, but we will bring all the details back.
When you do
back.
Bring that back, would you also bring back a number of the other areas where we have liabilities and we do not set aside funding, like vacation?
Yes.
Stuff like that?
Yes.
So that we can look at all of those in the same context?
Yes, sir.
Chairman, I'd
Chairman?
I'm sorry, Mr. Zimmerman?
Let me know, Mr. Monahan had to leave to deal with an emergency. What you're showing now is $5 million attributable to the impact of gas reporting bond. Isn't that a small amount?
Yes.
So, kind of going at this the other way from Chairman's question. Assuming we do have to fully account for it, and I personally don't see any way around that, but that's going to be a bigger number. And when are we going to know how big it is?
When we come back with the presentation, we can show you all the numbers well into the future.
What time frame?
When are we booked?
Next month.
Next month.
Next committee.
The next committee meeting.
In advance of our adoption of the budget.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So what's going to happen with it? I mean, we're working on budget numbers now that, you know, pretty much out there. Our jurisdictions have them. Our jurisdictions aren't likely to come up with a whole lot more money this spring. So, you know, you have some sense how much bigger that number is going to get?
This is as big as it would get for this budget. If the board chose to not pre-fund its trust, then the budget would go down by $5 million. The subsidy would go down by $5 million.
Okay, so you're not going to be asking for more this year.
Correct.
You're saying it's going to be an out year.
Yes.
So the question then is just how big an impact this is going to be. I happen to have a jurisdiction in which this is a very big number.
It's a very big number.
You know, I'm not anticipating that this is going to be helpful to our budget efforts.
Mr. Ewell.
Just, Chris, this is a good point. $5 million, is that just for FY09?
Yes.
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 The number is much larger than that.
Oh, yes, over time it's a very, very large number, and it grows each successive year. Yes.
And it's basically, you know, the accountants in Connecticut have decided that the way we've been doing this in government around the country isn't good enough, and now we have to basically put money aside for the same level of benefit we've been providing all this time. We now have to hold more of people's money to do nothing because they decided they need to act as if governments are private entities, which, of course, they're not, and, you know, can't avail themselves of the bankruptcy laws anyway. But nonetheless, we're going to maintain this fiction, so we're going to have a lot of money doing nothing. And since our lives here are ruled by some unknown accountants in Connecticut, we don't really have any choice. So, you know, I just, the sooner you figure out what it is and put a plan in place to do it, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
Unless our chairman figures out something that's more clever than that.
Well, Mr. Zimmerman, the important point here, first of all, is what you pointed out, and that is that the liability is substantially larger than $5 million. And probably the amount that we'll show on our books this year is substantially larger than $5 million. So it's something that we have to look at and decide what percentage of that liability we want to fund at this point. And one of the options is you have to show it as a liability, is all that GASB calls for. It doesn't say that you have to fund the liability. And that's the distinction that I'm trying to draw, is where do we want to be?
And I guess if you're not worried about things like your bond rating, you're not worried about it.
And because our bond rating is done on a different basis, it's not clear to me that we have to. Now, that having been said, as I said before, as a retiree, I'm perfectly happy to have money set aside for my health care.
But representing a AAA county, you know, of course,
yes,
you have sensitive to anything.
Right. You have much less choice than this agency does.
Good point. Thank you.
Two other items under program initiatives, IT maintenance contracts that need to be funded, and $1 million for the safety program. This is the safety initiative that we've discussed several times.
I have one other question, Mr. Chairman, on this page. I think Ms. Hutchins has it too.
Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Zimmerman.
Just briefly, the largest category of this 171 is what you're calling inflation.
Yes.
Which you've identified as 7%. And by inflation, I take it you mean the specific cost items that impact the agency.
Yes, sir. The
increase. It isn't inflation the way an economist uses the term. It's basically cost increases.
And that's correct. It's cost increases, and it's primarily in energy and worker compensation costs. Those are the two big ones.
Okay, because you do say combines normal CPI increases with energy health and claims. So does that mean you're making an assumption about overall price increases based on the CPI and then adding in some other ones you know of that are bigger?
That's correct. Some of them are close to CPI, maybe 3%, just normal increases, and then in other areas, that the ones I mentioned, energy, they're above that. Health insurance is slightly above that, although we're coming in at about 5%, which is lowest it's been in some time. But yes, it's as you discussed.
Okay, so you're telling me you don't know, let's say the agency bought 1,000 different things, and you, for the sake of argument, and you knew what the prices were, what's happening in each of those. Some of those run below general inflation is the overall price level of all the goods bought. So what we care about is the basket of goods we buy. And if you knew what was happening to all of those, then you know what's happening to your expenditure, which may be above or below inflation. It happens that a large portion of those fall into these categories, energy and health and other benefits, that are going faster than overall inflation and may drive the cost more than what we more generally experience. It's also possible that there are some things in there that are below inflation. And overall, that'll average out to something. Ideally, you would have an estimate across those things to say what that is, and maybe that would come out to 7%. But I think I'm hearing that you don't really have an estimate. What you have is, we know what inflation is, and I know these three categories of things are going up more than that, so I'm pushing it up by that amount.
Well, we do go through each category. If on the next slide you see the major categories, labor, fringes, contract out, I'll go through each one of those and tell you where we're seeing our major increases.
All I'm really trying to get at is, are you literally using the CPI, or is that just a way of describing the fact that, yeah, we're subject to a lot of general price increases, but we have a few big things that push us up more than that?
It's more the latter. The CPI is applied on base accounts, and then items that we know to be above it or below it, we would reflect those.
And those things are, those latter categories represent what percentage of expenditure?
If you look at, if I might go to the next slide where you look at the categories, and the way I compiled this was the labor in the fringes along with the metro access, the energy, the utilities, and the insurance, that those categories are 92% of the budget.
Okay. So in other words, rather than CPI being the basis, really for more than 90% of our expenditures, you're specifically identifying the cost drivers.
Yes, we are.
So that makes that 7% a pretty good number.
I think that is a very close number.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Hutchins.
Before you leave, also, we have the $31 million listed in service improvements, and some of those are understandable to us. But when will you provide the details of what those improvements are? For example, bus service improvements, rail, and the metro access. And I guess on the metro access, is that door-to-door that you're including?
Yes, and on the April agenda, we have a presentation scheduled to get into the details of the service improvements.
Okay, so that will come?
Yes. Next meeting.
Yes.
Next meeting.
Okay.
Keep going.
Okay. And we've discussed a great deal of this chart, but these are the major categories. And as I mentioned, 92% labor fringes, metro access, energy, and insurance make up are the 92% of the budget that are directly tied to service levels. Going into those categories, the first one being labor, you see an increase of 7%. The big unknown is the first bullet, the union contracts are being negotiated. In the authority, we have 1,600 non-union folks, primarily those are people in the building we're in. There are also some street supervisors that fall in that category, but for the most part, our staff would be represented. We have budgeted 3% for across-the-board increases tied to performance measures and goals for non-union, and then an additional 2% for that category for salary adjustments and special recognitions. There are also 105 FTEs, full-time equivalent positions, to support service improvements, and that would be the things we had discussed earlier, such as the bus. Those 105 positions are primarily bus operators, mechanics. There are 8 people in the access services as well. We've also adjusted the vacancy rate. We've been carrying a vacancy rate of 3%, meaning at any given time, that percent of your positions are not filled, hence you're not paying the salaries. Each 1% adjustment is worth $3 million. An important chart to the right Overtime is frequently discussed in the raw numbers, but when you look at the overtime expenditures as a percent of the overall budget, you see a significant downward trend going from 14% of the budget in 06 to a projected 9.5% in 09, and the actual number that's associated with that is $66 million. That's how much we have budgeted. But I would point out that the authority has used a low vacancy rate to help offset overtime costs. We're adjusting that somewhat by recognizing vacancy more to the level that it really is and adding some money to the overtime account.
Also, if I'd like to just to comment on the overtime, we do have a special program underway, an effort that I'm monitoring overtime and percentage of overtime to employees, and I expect a major shift in the amount of overtime during the calendar year.
During this calendar year?
Yes.
And will you be able to report at least some of that before we approve the budget?
I will be able to report the efforts that are underway.
But will it also be the results for those efforts?
I think the results is it's going to hit in the second half of the year.
Okay, so we won't really know very much about it at this point. I have a question about the salaries portion of this number. And salaries portion, I'm using this one, page 91. If I'm in the wrong place, tell me your actual detailed budget. If I look at the salaries portion, am I correct in assuming that this is local two, non-rep, and it's their pay increases
and
that will be the increase,
and the police.
Plus positions?
And the police.
And police.
Three groups.
Okay. Yes. So of those three, what I'm getting is a 16% increase in salaries prior to lapse adjustments.
So included in there are additional FTEs.
That's what I was getting at. Okay. So the how many additional positions are here?
76 of those 105 were directly dedicated to mechanics and operators.
So there are 176 administrative positions?
No.
Okay.
I'm saying there's 176
total.
176 total FTEs.
There's 71 additional FTEs in
right.
the salary category.
Not necessarily salary.
Right.
An example would be additional positions for escalator maintenance as we reduce the contract out function. Need to be adding FTEs on the escalator.
They're not part of the 105.
No, that 105 is related to the movement of vehicles.
Could we get a table that tells us how many positions are being, I mean, we just went through a major RIF and we cut people all over the place and now we seem to be adding them back in. And, you know, obviously for some operations, there's no choice. We have to.
Right.
And if we replace a contractor with in-house staff, we have to. I guess I'm looking for what else there is, and
we will bring that.
It would be useful to have that. It would be useful to know how this 15% is broken up in terms of union contract-driven COLAs and other increases.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying is for the non-union, you've got 5%, which is broken into a 3% portion and a 2% portion.
Correct.
That you just described. Mm-hmm. It would be helpful for us to know what those other ones are, because some of them, by definition, are contract-driven, and how much of that is due to increased staffing. It is a very large number. You know, 15% is a big number.
And I suggest that we provide that in a confidential memo, because the assumptions on the labor contract settlements are not public.
That's fine, or you can do it in executive session, whichever
okay.
works.
We can do it that way.
Yeah. Anything that is an assumption for a contract yet to be negotiated, we don't want to do
okay.
publicly. I agree.
Mr. Chairman, this is for Mr. Cato, I guess. While we're considering overtime, I know you said you're going to come back to us with overtime, with an overtime plan. And I know, generally speaking, we do try to cut back on that. But correct me if I'm wrong, there are some instances where it does behoove us to have overtime and where it is in our best interest and it is cost effective. I mean, so you have to balance things.
There is a balance.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. For example, when we do special events, that's generally on overtime, and that's the rate that we charge for those events. With the one example, the Nets game that's coming up on the 30th, we're going to have additional staffing, and that's going to be on overtime. But those type of events require that we do it. Well, I'm looking at it.
Because the alternative in that instance would be to, you know, if we...
Not have sufficient personnel there to deal with the situation. There is a balance.
Yeah.
What I'm looking at is to make sure that every dollar that we spend is necessary for the operations versus, quote, I think is a general term that I've heard, not just here but other places, that's overtime work. Well, all work has to be done.
Right.
And there's no set aside.
Right.
I want to make sure, review that to ensure we don't have a large number of hours utilized and spent because of work that could have been done in the regular work hours.
And I agree wholeheartedly with that.
Follow
up on that.
You finished, Ms. Hickel?
I am finished. I just wanted to bring that out.
I just want to follow up on that, on your point.
Okay. Mr. Zimmerman.
Just to clarify that, you know, when there are special events, I mean, give you an example. Some national organization is going to have some big event on the mall. They notify us.
Yes.
And they pay us, and they put up money in advance for the service that we're going to provide. We're going to provide additional service.
Yes.
And then when the ridership covers it, basically it's drawn against that, and they can get their money back if we get it back. But the point is, the additional revenue is anticipated to cover our additional cost for, say, an early opening or something like that.
Absolutely.
And you may meet that need through overtime. But overtime is part of the calculation of our costs.
Correct, yes.
So the revenue is covering that. That's not a problem. That's different than a situation in which we're going into overtime because we're short on personnel, things weren't planned properly, it's unexpected, unanticipated, and it's a loss to revenue, basically, because you're providing the same regular service, but you're paying more for it on an hourly basis.
You articulated my response far better than what I did.
I guess the question is there a way to show, as we look at budget numbers, is there a way to distinguish between that and say you had so much overtime, X percent of which is essentially planned, not a problem, the rest of which is in a different category, and even that I think would subdivide because there's a more subtle situation where you have a certain amount of overtime, in fact, even apart from the thing I just described, is perhaps optimal. Zero overtime is not necessarily optimal.
Right.
But the question is, can you figure out what is the target we ought to be going for on overtime as part of regular operation as opposed to that which is, you know, excessive?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
And we will bring that back to you.
I like that distinction, and I think it's an important point to make and has been well made here, and that is, you know, that zero overtime is not good.
No.
You know,
the budget
category costs us.
Budget categories actually have a category called scheduled overtime and unscheduled overtime. Unscheduled is stuff that wasn't anticipated.
Well, and I think there's the additional split that Mr. Zimmerman said. Yes, scheduled, generally speaking, we have to be assured, of course, that scheduled overtime is in fact advantageous. But in most cases, yes, that's a situation where it is advantageous to us to use overtime rather than hiring an additional person. But as Mr. Zimmerman pointed out, there are also those cases where we're presuming that there will be revenues to cover the overtime costs, and that's a breakout that we don't usually do. So having additional categories that say, these are places where, yeah, you want to use overtime because you're not going to hire somebody for one event, but we have a revenue other than subsidies and our regular passenger fares that cover it.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be very helpful as we go through this.
Certainly break it all out.
Any other questions on this? Moving on.
Okay, then the next category of fringes, obviously tied very closely to the salary accounts. I mentioned earlier that health care costs are coming in very reasonably, an increase of 4.8%. This is where we have the money for the GASB 45 that we've discussed, the pensions. We assume an 8% return on investment. We haven't been quite making that. We have a 3 to 5 year smoothing program, as most pension funds do. So we have a contribution to our pensions budgeted for the 09 year of 6.1%. Now the overall numbers get much smaller as we move into the contract out category, but clearly this is one that we'll look at as we update the budget, because when you look at the trend line, you see an increase of 5% in 07 and then 17 and 17. And as we examine the '08 budget, that'll give us a good indication of what '09 needs to be. So that is one we will update to you when we come back with the overall budget update. And the supply account.
Before you move on.
Yes.
There are two sub-items in this one, which again, you can get out of this little green book, that are even more surprising than the 17% and the 17% on '08 and '09. If you look at the professional, technical, those are our consulting contracts. Between '07 and '08, they went up 112%. That's a big increase. Between '08 and '09, they're projected to go up another 30%. So if you can look at those in great detail and then come back to us and tell us what you're actually going to do with all of this money.
Right.
That would be very helpful. And the contract maintenance area, which I assume includes the elevator escalator?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that may be the reason for it. It went up 23% between '07 and '08, and another 26%. If in fact, now I guess your contract maintenance is going the other way. Elevator escalator should be bringing that one down.
Right, the contract cost is in the CIP and it's going down, personnel cost going up.
The contract cost is in the CIP? Okay. So there, now, with that, even with that being taken out, we're still getting a 23% increase, or 26% increase between last year and this year.
We will break all of those down.
Those would be helpful for us to understand better. And if you get into it and say, oops, you know, there's something you want to take out, feel free.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, on supplies, again, as an overall percent of our budget, $56 million. The significant increase there is highlighted, large increase in rail parts due to the expiration of warranty on rehabbed cars. We will, of course, look at that account as well.
Yeah, that's one where I'd like to see, I guess we already have one analysis that is coming to us next month, and that is the '07 end-of-year spending.
Yes.
For the last 2 months, and the '08 first month, because one of the typical places for people to use up their budgets is to buy parts and supplies at the end of the fiscal year, and then nothing for the first month of the next fiscal year, because they've exhausted everything they can buy. I'd sort of like to see that, added to that, I'd like to see what's been happening to our inventory for '06, '07, and '08.
Total value.
Because what is the inventory look like? Because what the other thing that happens is we start building up and building up inventory. I can remember several years ago when we discovered that our inventory had grown, you know, way too large. And we have to go through a major process of trying to bring it back down. And as we do that, would you also add bench stock? And the reason is, very often the stuff gets drawn from inventory, sits on the bench, and you don't see that it's actually there. It's really the equivalent of inventory, and usually we don't do that adjustment till the end of the year.
One of the things I'd like to show you, one of the advantages to PeopleSoft is something called perpetual inventory, and that year-end bench stock adjustment has gone away. There's a continuous inventory.
So you know what's in bench stock. So you know when it goes into
yes.
the...
Yes, okay. But we can show you
yeah, that would be good, so that we can see how the bench stock changes, so we don't suddenly have inventory grew very little, but it all just moved into bench stock. Okay, thank you. So when you come back, if you would add that to the analysis, that allows us to have some idea as to where all of this stuff is going.
Energy and utilities, another account, of course, we'll look at, but my concern is that this one we might need an increase, one of the big accounts here being diesel fuel. The good news is the board approved the swap concept for fiscal '08, which we have done. And we estimate that'll save us $4 million over market prices, so that worked out very well. However, you see that we've budgeted $2.68 a gallon. When we built this budget, we were paying about $2.40. Today, we're paying $2.75. Each 10 cents is about $1.2 million. So that's an account we need to look at. That, of course, is a difficult one. On insurance, the biggest increase being the worker comp, and you see that, that trend line, albeit large, 42%, 41, 41. Brief history of this account is, if you go back to the 2000, maybe a little bit further into the 98, 99 timeframe, there was $75 or $80 million in this account. That money was used because the deposits into the account were smaller than the payments made. For example, in fiscal 03, no additional money was put into the account, but the payments were $15 million. So the reserve, the contingency, was used to fund the year-to-year expenses, and we are now rebuilding that, as well as the expenditures have increased significantly. So is there any good news? Yes. These numbers are all based on actuarial evaluations, and the current estimate, the today estimate for 10, would be back down in the $30 million range.
I'd like to comment on this one also. First of all, I'd like to make clear that that was not staff that made those adjustments in that reserve. That was a board-approved policy to draw down that reserve. So, you know, to whatever degree it went down to wherever it went, it was a decision that we as board members made. But when I look at the workers' comp line, which is included in here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I should be looking at the workers' comp, which is in fringes, plus the casualty and liability,
we've
which is
moved it all
farther
to this page.
Okay, and that's what this represents.
Yes, correct.
Workers' comp went up 27% between 07 and 08 and 47% between 08 and 09. And so was, as you said, one of the largest contributors to this. Now, these are the dollars going into a reserve, not the dollars coming out, right?
Yes.
What would be really helpful would be to know what the dollars are coming out, because as many of you know, I'm not one of the great believers in some of the estimates that are made about what our out-year liabilities will be. And so if we could see what happened in 06, 07, 08, and actual workers' comp payments. And if I understand correctly also, we have a contract with DuPont to try and cap this, and this is why you're presuming that it's going to sort of level off?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'd love to see what that curve looks like. So these are useful numbers for us.
Okay. You remember we had that display here once before. We'll dig it back out, but okay. It showed that the claims cost was a pretty steady, constant growth rate, and with workers' comp payouts, there was actually almost a step function cost curve. We were having pretty annual.
This was the actual as opposed to the actuarial
payouts towards claims.
Okay, I'd love to see that again. Sure. That may have happened at a time I didn't hear. I don't remember it. Anybody else have a question? Okay, thank you.
The next category, leases, and this gets to the point that I discussed very early on, the $44 million in one-time money, the litigation settlement, and the health benefits. So you see there's virtually, once you neutralize for that effect, this is a very flat account as far as the expenditures, $9 million, $10 million, and $10 million. And you can see on the sheet what this funds.
And so what you're saying is here this is due to the fact that we took a one-time only source of income and we made it a credit to cost.
Yes, exactly.
And we won't do that next year. We'll take the revenue and it'll be a separate item that we can see and it won't get in the middle of one of the cost lines or
correct.
Right.
Okay.
And the summary of all this, and I mentioned this earlier, a great deal of this budget, the 92% figure, is controlled by the amount of service we put out in our contracts, our labor contracts, and our energy. Broken down here in a slightly different manner. But again, the key fact is we need to update these numbers based on the additional 6 months' experience we have, as well as looking at our revenue accounts. The next slide, some issues of concern. We are seeing inflation pick up a little bit. It appears this month it will be about 4.3%. General economic slowdown, although that may be a good thing for us as ridership continues to increase. Our operating contingency today is at zero. I'm optimistic we will be able to replenish that as we come to the end of fiscal 08. There were significant savings taken in the 08 budget, which you've seen many times before and are listed here. So those are some of the issues that we'll be considering as we update the budget for your approval in the May-June timeframe.
Ms. Hutchins.
I would think that we would be remiss if we didn't list an issue of the jurisdictional challenges that we are having budgetary, so that as you are making those adjustments and coming back to us with the details, you come back at a time significantly helpful for us to recognize what our anticipation or the impact on us as well. And I think in the areas that we need to look is to balance off the things that we see as improvements or changes that should or should not, or required or should not be required this time, because I think that is one of the challenges that we're all going
to. Maybe following up on that, there are two areas where obviously we can be making some changes that can help us in local jurisdictions struggling with some of our problems. And one of those clearly is projecting higher revenues, and that will come as a result of understanding better what the fare increases that we just did will result in. And if I look ahead, it does appear that we are doing better than expected on the revenues that we're bringing in. And the other one is cost reductions. What we're saying is, please make those and have those end up as subsidy reductions, not just, oh, we can find another way to spend it. If there are other ways to spend it, we're more than happy to talk about it, but I think what you're hearing is we're all suffering. And so the earlier you can come in with cost savings and projections for revenue increases due to the fare increase and what that might do to subsidies, the better some of us who are struggling with coming up with the dollars are going to feel. Is that what you were saying?
We can say it over and over, but it still becomes the same message.
Right, right. Well, there's a tendency to always find some other place to have, you know, we bring this cost down, but that cost goes up.
That's very true. Very true.
And we're looking for some subsidy reductions, which brings us to our next item, if there are no comments on this one.
And this is a review of the subsidy allocation formulas, mostly just a look at how the calculations are done. The primary reason we did this is in the current budget, in fiscal 08, we had to effectively take a timeout from using the board-approved formulas. There were so many changes going on as we approved the 08 budget that our budget review process got very far out of sync with the jurisdictional budget review processes. And I was driving all these guys crazy because I couldn't tell them what their individual subsidies were going to be this year. So we basically made an agreement that in 08 we would just lock it, place it the numbers that everybody was relying on. So as that freeze comes off and we roll into 09, we're now back to using the board-approved subsidy allocation formula. As 08 ends and the auditors come on the property and we audit the books for the actuals, that audit adjustment process will take hold, and any of the call them misallocation, but unusual allocation that got into the 08 budget will be trued up at that point. Taking a look at how the operating budget is built, we think of it as the operating budget, but actually there's a bunch of mini budgets from a subsidy allocation point of view. Metro Rail is treated different than Metro Bus. And even inside Metro Bus, there's different flavors of Metro Bus. There are regional Metro Bus routes and non-regional Metro Bus routes. The jurisdictions pay for those in different formulas. And Metro Access has its own different set of formulas. So when we talk about a $1.3 billion budget, you can see the various boxes that we have to put around the revenues and expenses to get to the subsidy by mode, kind of a technical phrase, budgeting around. Those are the three primary modes, mode meaning mode of transportation, how people move. You're either moving on Metro Rail, Metro Bus, or Metro Access. There are five primary ways we do a subsidy allocation calculation. For Metro Rail subsidy, we break it apart into two pieces. There's a base allocation, and we have a separate allocation for what's called max fare. Bus, as I mentioned, there are regional bus routes and non-regional bus routes, and we allocate the subsidy differently there. And inside of Metro Access, there is an allocation to the district, Montgomery, Prince George's County, and Northern Virginia, but then sub-allocations inside of Northern Virginia. Next page. This is the number, I won't go through all the numbers. This is the page that all the jurisdictional staff and the budget people out in the region need to do their own budgeting. Grand total subsidy for 09 is in the left-hand side, $537.4 million. Again, you can see by mode of operation, the Metro Rail subsidy of $124 million, the Metro Bus total subsidy of $348 million, which is broken into its two pieces, and a $64 million subsidy for Metro Access. The rows, obviously, are the jurisdictions. Next page.
Before you jump.
Sure.
I just want to observe that the state of Maryland now represents 64% of Metro Access. We are, without a doubt, the heaviest user of that, and that's the reason for that. But we would like to look into a little bit more about why our number keeps rising as fast as it does. It's potentially totally explainable by the fact that our citizens are making greater use of it. But obviously,
heaviest users, and I suspect longer trips, combined to drive your cost.
Could be. And we'd like to understand what's going on there, because that's a really big number, and it keeps rising.
I think the number also in terms of Maryland versus Fairfax County, Virginia, is that Fairfax has another system that is also supplemented.
That's correct.
And so Arlington, similarly, most of the service is done by alternative. Mm-hmm. That we're paying for directly out of our budget, which is
the
subsidy.
Mr. Chairman, we have a presentation scheduled for next month on this subject.
Thank you.
The 537 that I'm showing on these charts is different than what's in this green budget book and what was originally proposed, and there's two primary reasons. Middle section here, and I won't go through all the math. The first adjustment is just an oops. As we were putting the budget together and trying to load things into PeopleSoft and get everything proper by mode and by account and by category, it was just a flat-out oops. And it actually is a net reduction to the subsidy when we make that correction of $176,000. You can see there are modal variances, and that plays into how the subsidy is allocated. And last month, the board approved three pieces of additional bus service, and you can see them called out here. So the net of all that is subsidy went up from $535.5 to $537.5. 535 was a key number that was in the original general manager's proposed budget. That was coming off of a 6.5% increase that we had talked about during the fare increase discussion.
And the shift from bus to rail reflected the difference in the fares. The fare increase is primarily rail and not very
yes.
much bus.
Yes, the vast majority of the additional $109 million in revenue goes into the rail mode. Rail fares are parking.
So the subsidy goes down in rail and the subsidy goes up in bus, relatively speaking.
Yes. Okay. And this final page just shows you a comparison from one year to the next. And again, as I mentioned, last year's subsidy totaled $500 million. You can see it by jurisdiction. It's up more than the 6.5% now, which is, again, those service increases that I just mentioned on the previous slide. Even though you can't see it in the pie charts, what's happening over time is the relative shares between Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, and even the sub-allocations, remain fairly constant. I can go through the appendix if you want. To, but basically there's so many ratios and so much math, it's difficult for any major shifts to happen in any one year. The only kind of notable thing that happened this year is we put the new rail passenger survey results in place, and it had a effect of increasing the district subsidy, increased Montgomery, but decreased Prince George's. So from an MDOT's point of view, it's almost a zero sum, and Virginia went down by a very small amount. Other than that, the formulas in place are all of the board approved formulas. I sent a fairly detailed spreadsheet out to the JCC last week to actually give them the toolkits to start doing this themselves, better arm them with the ability to cast their own budgets in the future. But I think at this point we're clean with the math, sitting on a $537 million proposed subsidy.
When we originally, go ahead.
Let me finish here, because it goes back to
the point. Okay. When we originally were talking about this budget, one of the things we said, as you point out, was the guidance of 6.5% subsidy increase.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I take out the increases of reimbursable services, I come out at more than a 6.5% subsidy increase. I may have done my calculations wrong, but I'm a little bit over 7%. And for those of us in Maryland, looking at that 9%, if you take out our increases in reimbursable services, it's 8.4%. So you can see where, going back to Ms. Hutchins' comment, we're all sort of struggling with this. would you double-check my numbers, make sure that you come out with the same thing I do?
Yes.
And if so, the question is, why are we above where we said we were going to be? If so, right?
Yes.
When I do it and I pull it out, it doesn't look like the same number. It looks like we've gone up.
Yes. Proof it and get it to you.
Okay.
I just wanted to go back to the lease part to understand. So we're saying that the allocation between bus and rail is where you showed an incorrect.
In the green book, yes.
And so here it's reflecting the bottom line stays the same,
mm-hmm.
but the allocation of a fare increase on rail versus bus.
Slightly different issues. The $109 million fare increase is predominantly rail revenue, so it will cause the rail subsidy to go down, all else being equal. So that was one issue, and that is correctly factored into all the allocations. The oops that we had was actually on the expense side of the equation. We had the total expense correct off $170,000, but it was wrong by mode. We've now corrected that. We had too much expense in one mode and not enough expense in the other mode.
The big change was due to the fare change. Is that right? The big number change between the modes, bus and rail, was primarily due to the fact that we increased fares dramatically on rail, but not at all on bus. Or was part of that the cost that
Hudgens was asking about? Page, please. This line here called allocation correction is the oops. And these are the expense by mode calculations that we corrected. Total expense was overstated by $176,000.
May I just interrupt you?
So it has nothing, that
expense error it has nothing to do with the increase in rail.
Correct.
It's just that you had an error in your increase calculation.
That is correct.
So,
and that is the result of what? Just
people saw?
Off, okay.
I shouldn't
and
say that.
And so where does the fare stuff come in?
The fare stuff is built into revenue parts of each of the subsidies. So when you go back to the original page and you see rail and bus and metro access, first row was revenue. And all of the $109 million of fare increase is built into that revenue calculation.
But when you did your original, you didn't know what that fare increase was going to be, right?
Yes.
Or did you?
Yes.
So the first one that went out, you already knew where we were going to end up because we didn't approve it until December.
Right, and we didn't propose the budget till January, so we were a month behind you.
So
we did know
that.
So
you already had that built in at that point.
Okay. So if there were questions, I'd be happy to take them, but this is mostly to document the details of this year's subsidy allocation.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Does that conclude this presentation on this item?
Yes.
Let me just say, I think this is one of the most generally useful presentations on this subject in particular that I've seen. It's especially helpful, I think, for this is one of the things that's almost timeless. You can change the numbers, but it is a fundamental fact of the way Metro functions and is governed, and it is also one of the things least understood.
Mm-hmm.
I think this presentation is a good job of breaking it up into parts that people get their hands around when they want to tackle the question of how the Metro system works. And it would be useful, clearly, for new members of this board.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of thing somebody should be handed as soon as you're appointed, in my opinion. It also would be helpful for members of other boards that make decisions about funding this and frequently ask, how does this thing work? And you can tell they're almost afraid to ask because they know when they ask about a funding formula, you know, that it's going to be a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think this would be a very useful thing for instance, my colleagues the board I serve on to be able to understand, you know, how is it that we allocate all this. I think there's often a lot of misunderstanding about the way the Metro formula works, and obviously there's mysteries around how it was created in the first place, but we all can imagine who weren't there, the kind of compromises made to come up with it. But a lot of times I think people come at it thinking there's something wrong with the formula, and then they go looking at it and you realize, you know, there's a reason they wound up where they did.
Mm-hmm.
and there are implications of it that are significant for how things change. For instance, if a new line is added, let's say, and there are a whole bunch of new stations, you know, it is reflected in these numbers. So I think this is more useful than yesterday, more than for just us here. Many of us happen to be the ones most familiar with this, but there are a lot of people who aren't and who are afraid to ask. And I think this is a good thing to be able to give to people, to maybe a little, you know, it takes away some of the mystery of this whole thing. And I would suggest that we find ways to make this more available and more useful to more folks.
Mr. Zimmerman, actually, there was a, I think this is drawn from a presentation that was made to the board a little over 2 years ago by people who shall remain nameless, which was really a subsidy 101, which is, actually breaks each step out and shows what each step is. And if we could resurrect that one, that might go exactly to where you're talking.
Well, the reason I mention this is, you know, and this is my 11th year on this board here, I've noticed that every few years there's an accumulation of questions about subsidy, and somebody asks about it, and then we force staff to come out with something, and then they show it. And then that knowledge kind of goes away, and then there's turnover, and eventually there's another accumulation, and it comes back again. 2 years ago was one of those times.
Right.
This is, you know, at least the third time since I've been here. But I think if there was a way to have, you know, kind of an ongoing, again, for instance, could you do this in a way that could be on the website?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Could we do it in a way that's a document that's easily accessible to people who might be on the Writers Advisory Council or anybody? I mean, it's such a fundamental thing. It seems to me it would be useful for us to have it available to people who ask that question. I think that a lot of questions answered simply by seeing these pages.
I think that's a very good idea. And I might want to also copy the old one and send it back out to the board one more time.
Communications director also shaking her head. Yes, put this in some type of publication that we can send out.
Mr. Chair, I just chime into that. You produce a very good facts about Metro that can be easily palmed in your hand, and this could be one, because I think it is sort of the Bible by which we operate. We want people to understand it rather than have to revisit it often. But we'll be revisiting it no matter what. That's always a discussion that comes up. I was just taken back to page 59 and noting that the Virginia change is reflected predominantly appears from just Fairfax. And I thought much of this was an accumulation of other things. Are you at the same point where I am on the subsidy change? A combination of things contributed to it, inflation being one and others. It seems to be distributed in the change only in Fairfax.
I'm sorry?
The change reflected?
One of the issues that's going on this year is, it's hard to explain even. When the 08 budget was originally proposed, prior to John being here, that budget proposal assumed bus service cuts. The vast majority of those bus service cuts were in Fairfax County. So Fairfax's subsidy was reduced to take advantage or take credit for those service reductions. Then that subsidy was frozen in place. We never updated the 08 allocations. So what basically happened is Fairfax was underbilled during 08 because those bus services were never cut.
The service, so individual service areas that were reduced were never.
Right, the original proposed 08 budget had almost $14 million of bus service reductions in addition to a fare increase. And when we went through the process of actually building the 08 budget, those bus service cuts did not happen. Found other ways to balance the budget. However, the subsidy allocation couldn't be updated. It came too late in the process. Fairfax and all the other jurisdictions needed to lock in on their budgets prior to when we would have had an opportunity to true up these numbers. So this is where the board's audit adjustment policy comes in. If we get to the end of this year and the actual revenues and expenses are known, those will be rerun through the subsidy allocation formula so that the corrected billings eventually cycle through this whole process.
So if I understand Ms. Hutchins, what just got said, Fairfax County is currently being underbilled for '08, and you should expect, in addition to your increase for '09, another increase associated with the audit adjustment for '10.
But I think they're saying it's here.
No. Well, part of it is here because it now shows up here, but part of it is also, since they're being underbilled in '08, they will get an audit adjustment at the end of '08.
To your point, the change column looks very large. The $8 million of change appears very large, and the issue is because the '08 number is too small.
I guess there is going to, I hear you, I guess I need to sit down and look at that.
Okay.
See why.
What should the '08 number be?
Well, yeah, that's a good question as to what it should be, but I guess I have to understand the lack of underbilling.
Happy to get it.
Okay, what, Mrs. Zimmerman wants to know, what should the number be, but.
One of the things that I guess we.
How much of that are we talking about? That $8 million is really this year that should be in the number on the left-hand column. Is it a 119? It should probably be.
I don't know that I can answer that off the top of my head because it's.
Well, let me just give you.
A combination of things.
Suppose it was roughly half, just for the sake of argument. That would say, you know, $4 million. Mr. Williamsworth tells me it's $5 million. Okay. So let's say it's $5
million. Right.
Which would put you at 124, and so it'd be a $3 million increase, which is not so much in all that.
Right.
On the other hand, it would still be true that all the subsidy increase on the Virginia side is attributable to Fairfax, where the other smaller jurisdictions all level.
They're rounding to less than zero.
And I realize rounding comes up to some of it, but still, it's interesting that all the increase comes in the one large jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
Which, because certain things in the formula don't change, there's the same number of rail stations, that can only be attributable to either changes in ridership or, I guess, on the bus side, on service.
And the originally proposed fare increase in '08 was a $64 million fare increase. And there were modal assumptions in there. It was a proportional fare increase, so there was additional bus revenue, additional rail revenue assumed. And actually, thinking about it, it was a blended type of proposal because we had both a proportional increase and then there was a market-driven increase that we put all together in the originally proposed budget, assuming that the details would be worked out January, February, March, April, May.
Last year.
Last year.
Yeah, but I already just subtracted all that. As I said, if we have all that in on the $5 million or whatever it is, there's some amount left that is attributable to the difference between this year's service and next year's.
Some are being underbilled, some are being overbilled.
And it had to come from somewhere to be concentrating in the one jurisdiction. So the question is, does that mean Fairfax ridership went up while the others didn't? In fact, I think that's the opposite.
Well, we'll see, but yeah, we'll see.
But, you know, if it's not that, did bus miles change or something? I mean, I don't know, maybe you can't answer off the top of your head. But it at least is a fair question. How did it work out that way?
We'll get it.
We'll go through details of it and figure it out.
Well, I just think we need to go back and have a greater understanding of that.
Okay, certainly. Happy to.
So did.
Does it appear well?
Yeah, I guess where we are at this point, and I just want to make sure I know what we've just asked for, is because the '08 subsidy was frozen and therefore does not, or allocation was frozen, and does not reflect what the formula would do, which will get reflected in the audit adjustment. Do we at this point have the capability to, and can we give to the members of the board what we expect will happen by the end of the fiscal year so we can be prepared?
Yes, what is required, I just need to make a forecast of revenue and expenses at June 30th, run that through the formulas.
Mm-hmm. Not including the fare increase because you're not making
Correct.
A part of this.
Okay. Yes, I can do that.
And is that what we're looking for at this point? And that will also get to your issue, Mr. Graham.
The council tell me in the meantime what the answer to the question.
Go ahead and ask your question.
I mean, I'm coming into this a little late. We had a 5-alarm fire in Mount Pleasant, which is absolutely incredible. But what was the District of Columbia overbilled, underbilled, or did we get the accurate bill?
I believe it was accurate. The issue was mostly in the suburban jurisdiction.
Who was overbilled and who was underbilled?
I think Fairfax was under, and I would suspect the opposite happened in Maryland.
Oh, so.
But that's what I have to prove out.
And you don't know that at this point?
That's what we're asking for, is for them to do that run so that, because it will occur in the audit adjustment, and it is currently affecting the '09 projections, so it would help us to know how those break down. Are we done with the discussion of the budget and ready to go to the monthly report?
I will go through this fairly quickly, because most of the important issues have already been talked about. If we could just jump right to page 85. The table on page 85 is...
Do you want to the file?
One more back. Good, right there. It's impossible to see it on the screen, but I'll use the laser pointer so you can see on your page what I'm talking about. This row right here is where we're going to have the set aside for the FY08 portion of the fare increase. So that $5.3 million is the fare increase revenue that was collected during the last 3 weeks of January that is being reserved to be reported as revenue in FY09.
What page is that in there?
85.
Nobody can read that.
For this report, I just did it in total for the remaining reports of this year. I will actually break this out by mode and by account so that we can see precisely how this revenue will be set aside and able to track it through the subsidy allocation. But basically, what that does is it neutralizes the effect of the fare increase, the underlying budget results. So what you can see is on a year-to-date basis, through the end of January, revenues excluding the fare increase are virtually on budget, off by 0.2%. That's near perfect. And the expenses are about 1% under budget, favorable by 6.6%. So on a budgetary sense, I think we're in good shape more than halfway through the year. The next page, the bottom, and I'll just point at it here so you can see where it is on the paper. It's one of those odd metro results that we had a fare increase and ridership went up 6%. And that's something we're going to have to watch. I know that February ridership, we had another 6% growth year over year actuals. Whether that's a trend or not, I don't know.
This is rail ridership? Or
rail average weekday ridership jumped by 6% January to January.
I can't resist making a comment. If you remember when we were discussing the fare increase, we talked about how conservative the elasticity numbers ought to be. Turns out that instead of being positive, they should have been negative.
Apparently the Neiman Marcus of transit, the more we charge, the more people ride us.
That's not an official statement of the agency.
Don't put that.
I think I saw them all right.
Thank you, Mr. Arkham. Now you get the quote, none of us.
All right. That concludes this report.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Okay, now we've all had fun with that. Let's remember the reality, in case there's any other economist around here who's going to be screaming somewhere. This is not a laboratory experiment, so we don't find out what elasticity is because we change the price and we see what happens. The key requirement, as I said at the NBTC meeting last week, comes from that first lesson you got in your economics class that you've now forgotten, which is the two Latin words you need to know, ceteris paribus, the rest the same. Everything else isn't equal. If everything else stays the same, then you have such an experiment. But of course, everything else is changing. The price of gasoline is, you know, the price of a barrel of oil went over $100 for the first time. All kinds of things are happening that are affecting ridership. So we cannot really conclude anything based on a month or two's data without an awful lot of analysis and more data. What we know is ridership is growing. We also know the congestion hasn't gotten any better. Gasoline's gotten more expensive. And in fact, there are an awful lot of advantages to riding Metro. We are also improving quality. And I would point out that we have more rail cars on the system. We've got more 8-car trains running, which means we have more capacity, which means at a lot of our stations, people are finding it at least a little bit easier to get on the train. So all of those things contribute. I'm glad it's going up. But let's not think that we've somehow reversed the demand curve, you know, from what everybody's thought for 100 years. Because the first 2 months of the year after a fare increase, we find that we have ridership going up. I suspect we're going to continue to see ridership going up for the reasons I said.
more capacity, better quality service, higher gas prices, and, you know, growing demand that continues to happen in an economy that's generating new jobs and bringing in more tourists. Okay, now I've said it.
And that's a very good point. I think it's also important to say that trying to attribute the increased ridership and split it up among all of those different things is essentially impossible. We can't say how much is due to which one.
Ms. Hutchins, did you have a comment you want to make?
I do want to say something. You know, because we had, in this scheme of things, we had some very interesting results at the Columbia Heights station when we compared the weekend at the Target, you know, the first weekend of Target, to the immediate prior weekend. And what we saw was a 15% increase, 1,700 new riders into that station, one week compared to the other week. And it was higher, of course, if you compared last weekend to the weekend a year prior. And so we had a, that's a pretty healthy jump, yes. Wouldn't you say, Mr. Cato, 15%?
Yes, I would say that.
And we're going to see, of course, very similar jump, maybe even a greater jump, depending upon the particular day at the Navy Yard station, where we're going to see some significant ridership, which I know is incorporated into our projections, but Columbia Heights is not. And so, I mean, you can see if that's going to happen, you know, every day, we will see some, you know, noteworthy changes in the Green Line, Yellow Line ridership. So that might also help us as well.
And I will note, Mr. Graham will also increase your subsidy. That was a discussion we were having before.
It's always bad news.
and make a case for moving the Yellow Line service to Columbia Heights to Peak. Didn't you say, Mr. Benjamin?
Another possibility.
It's a rail car.
Just a quick request.
Yeah, I'll tell you something else, though, speaking of subsidies and monies. The soft opening day of Target in the District of Columbia, the suburban members will be especially interested in that. The first soft opening day, which was a Wednesday, proved for Target to be the second highest gross of any store in the United States. And there are 1,200 Targets in the United States, by the way. The soft opening, we haven't gotten the sales figures from the first weekend. So there will be some offsetting compensation for us.
I'm glad to know that you will have the tax receipts that will allow you to pay the higher subsidy. Just an observation. If I look at the detailed financials, which are useful to look at, the budget numbers, I assume, are correct for 08, looking starting on page 92. And they will not change for the rest of the year. In other words, the way we've now agreed to attribute the revenues, the highest you would, no, I guess the budget numbers will stay the same. We're saying we're always going to assume the same budget. When we do the actuals, could we do the subtraction that you did on this first page so that by the time we see the revenue numbers in here, these are the revenues that are actually accruing in 08 and do not include those that are going to a reserve for 09?
Absolutely.
So do that off the top, and then, and could you reissue January with that change?
Certainly.
So that way we can see what's actually going on this year, mm-hmm, instead of having the next year's revenues mixed in.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. All right, are there any other comments on anything? If not, without objection, the meeting is, subsequent agendas. Just note that almost everything that we talked about is somewhere in one of the subsequent agendas. I think we added one or two items, and if you could review and adjust that subsequent agenda for one or two things that we asked for, we'd greatly appreciate it. So without objection, this committee meeting is adjourned, and Mr.